Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Brewmaster, Silent Phil in the ones and twos. Speaking of brewing, our special guest today is Cincinnati's own Jim Cook, the founder and designated drinker of Boston Beer Company, the makers of none other than the original craft beer, Samuel Adams. Sherry,
I thought we would kick off Oktoberfest early.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Looking forward to having Jim join us here just in a few minutes. But first, Sherry, we've almost got this council field locked in. Where are we at with that? And because now it's after Labor Day, Sherry. And
I'm starting to see that energy that we have been said has been missing.
I'm glad you are.
I am. Just talking about it a lot. Yeah. People asking a lot of questions about how they can follow things. And really, I think people are starting to pay attention and think everyone's kind of back to it. It's fall.
Yeah. So what's the field going to end up, or what's it at now? And
you know, I thought we would have it all wrapped up in a nice little bow, but it's council. Of course, we're not going to do that. 33 candidates got certified on the certified day. There's two candidates that remain up in the air. Representative Tom Brinkman is running from Mount Lookout, and Tiaria Powell, an East Westwood community activist, really been involved out there. So a Democrat and a Republican. They both have some technical issues with their petitions, and so we're waiting for like a ruling from the Secretary of State to see whether they should be on the ballot or not. So it really is the technicality and not like some partisan political
seems fight. Seem very minor technicalities on there, and the Secretary of State breaks the 2-2 tie on the Board of Elections. I'd expect the Secretary of State to end up voting to put both of these candidates on the ballot to take it to, 35?
Agree.
That's what it would do. Yeah.
Yeah, it was going to take it to 35. You know, the largest in modern history, which I'm basically – you can't say ever, but I kind of am. Yeah. 31 candidates in 2005. Huge field that year. You know, the city was, you know, kind of coming back. The aftermath of the civil unrest, 3CDC's just created. It's like this new chapter in Cincinnati that year, and that's where we're at now. People were turning a page, and people are like, why is there such a large field? And I literally look at that list, and I think most of them said, I could do a better job than that. And so I think that's kind of what propelled people. And remember, too, these people had to get 500 signatures. That is no easy task. It is a pandemic.
500 valid signatures. So meaning you've got even more. You have to get even more usually.
So that's really – it's propelling people to say, I want to get involved and I want to do this.
Yeah. Well, we'll be talking. We'll be following your coverage on the city council race at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. Your stories on Cincinnati.com and in the Cincinnati Inquirer. Because, hey, it's post-Labor Day now, and so the campaigns we expect will start heating up, and Sherry will be watchdogging this race throughout the November election and the mayor's race as well. So
you don't want to see my calendar.
Speaking of,
Sherry. List of things to do.
Speaking of, and potentially you may want to mark your calendars for you, our listeners, for – the Inquirer mayoral debate coming up on September the 21st.
Live in person at Xavier.
Live in person at 7 o'clock.
There's going to be some, you know, pandemic nods to being safe. But the Inquirer really did feel like it was important to do this in person. We had all of those Zoom, forums during the primary. And you can't get people off their talking points. On a Zoom, it's almost impossible. Yep. There's no replacing a full debate. And with both of them being Democrats, with a lot of similar views, but not all, as you'll be reading in upcoming stories, you really want to pay attention. Our debate will kind of kick things off. I already have my list of questions ready to go. And the other debates, let's get to know these candidates.
Yeah, definitely. Let's shift away from that and bring on Jim Cook. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome native son of Cincinnati, founder, brewer, and designated drinker of Boston Beer Company, our very own Jim Cook. Jim, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, but I've got beer surrounding me. So,
so you're doing really great.
I am. I mean, if I'm not doing great, the world's a pretty miserable place. So hopefully I can not just talk, but I want to at least have a beer in front of me. So, because over the years, I've discovered that I'm really boring when I'm not drinking.
Soon, we are all going to have the chance to be surrounded by beer when we go to Oktoberfest next week, in what is now the largest ever Oktoberfest in the country.
Awesome. And the world.
In the world.
You know, Cincinnati's Oktoberfest has always played second fiddle to, you know, the granddaddy of them all, the Munich Oktoberfest. And so it's always been a little frustrating for Cincinnati to come in second. It's like baseball. And now this year, for the first time in 200 years, the world's largest Oktoberfest will be in Cincinnati. So if you want to go to the largest Oktoberfest in the world this year, you don't have to go to Munich. Just show up on Fountain Square.
Starts next Thursday, the added night, big 4 days next week.
Will you be here for it?
I am currently planning, though, you know, these are crazy times and things change, but I very much would like to because, as you know, I've still got family in Cincinnati, having grown up there. So it's always an opportunity for me to see my family.
And they'll be selling just a few Samuel Adams Oktoberfests.
I think so. You know, we've been very proud to have the opportunity to sponsor Cincinnati Oktoberfest for many years. I think that was kind of in my mind when, you know, Sam Adams kind of became something more than just Jim Cook's homebrew and kind of played on a bigger stage when you could see Sam Adams poured all over downtown Cincinnati for those. It used to be just 2 days, and now it's expanded to four.
And speaking of homebrew, let's take us all the way. Let's go all the way back to you growing up in Cincinnati. And your family, you come from a family of homebrewers, right?
Well, I know actually of professional brewers. I'm the sixth oldest son in a row in my family to be a brewer. My father was a brewmaster in Cincinnati. My grandfather was a brewmaster in Cincinnati as well. And my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, my great-great-great-grandfather were brewers in St. Louis after emigrating from Germany.
I didn't realize. I knew it was a long history. I didn't realize it was on that high. I thought it started with you know, homebrew with your great, was it your great 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 grandfather? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Three greats?
Yeah, no, they were, you know, homebrewing actually was illegal in the United States until Jimmy Carter legalized it in 1979. And that was kind of a watershed moment because, you know, small scale brewing, very, very small scale kitchen, you know, counter level brewing became legal and possible. So the craft brewing movement, which, you know, Samuel Adams helped found, really grew out of homebrewers. And I made the first batch of the recipe for Sam Adams Boston Lager in my kitchen. My father had been a professional brewer, worked at most of the breweries in Cincinnati at that point. And there were a number of them. There was Hudepohl, there was Schaneling, yeah. there was Berger, there was Bavarians across the river, there was, you know, Wiedemann's over there in Newport. And my dad had apprenticed and co-opted his way through the University of Cincinnati working in breweries, and then went to brewmaster school and became a professional brewmaster.
Wow.
So I read a story that your dad took the recipe out of the attic to give to you. Which,
yes.
Who developed the recipe and did you tweak it?
Those are very good questions, Sherry. Yeah, the story is true. I'll tell you the whole story. This was like 1983, I think. And, you know, I grew up knowing about brewing a little bit because of my dad, but my dad got out of the brewing industry in the 1950s because he kept losing his job. When he was, when he went to brewmaster school, there were about 1,000 breweries in the United States, but they were local, regional breweries, and the big national brands, the Bud and Miller and Coors, were just grinding them up. Mm-hmm. And of those 1,000 breweries, by the time I started Sam Adams, 950 of them had gone out of business. So he didn't think going into, you know, making beer was a great career decision for me. I think he told me it was the dumbest thing he'd ever heard come out of my mouth. And you know, I tried to explain to him, you know, Dad, it's not like it was when you were a brewmaster. I'm not trying to compete with the big guys. I have a different idea. I'm going to start a small-scale brewery to make small batches of very high-quality, handcrafted beer. I'm going to sell it for a significant price premium over the mass-produced, mass-marketed beers. I know I'll never be a big business, and it'll be a small local business, but I think I can make a living from it, and it's what I really want to do. And he kind of came around, and he said, well, you know, you're going to need a great beer. You're not going to be able to do this without something really special. So, come up to the attic with me. And we went up to the attic at our house in Cincinnati, and he had a trunk from, when he was a brewmaster. And, it had, well, on top of it, it had all these car magazines from like the 50s, Motor Trend and Road and Track and things like that. Cause he, his last brewing job was in Minster, Ohio, up north. And
big, you know, big German beer place.
Big. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, you know, we call it Minster, but it's named after the same town in Germany, which is Münster, like Münster cheese. So yes, that was a, and there was a brewery there, Wooden Shoe Brewery. He was the last brewmaster there. But he would go up there and work during the week and then come back on the weekends, and he'd read all these car magazines at night. So he had all these car magazines. He opens the trunk. There's, you know, Road and Track. He's like, what is this? He, you know, sets them aside, and underneath are the brewing notes from his time as a brewmaster and from his time, you know, in brewmaster school. And at the bottom of them, he pulls out a recipe that's on this old yellow paper and written in pencil. And it's the recipe for Lewis Cook Lager, which was the flagship beer of my great grandfather's, actually, I guess, great-great-grandfather's brewery in St. Louis. And he made it. He had a brewery there. It was a Lewis Cook brewery. And he made this rich, flavorful, traditional, you know, very German-type beer from like 1860 till 1900 when the brewery, again, got consolidated. And he had the bad fortune of starting his brewery about four blocks away from another German immigrant's brewery. His name was August Busch. And they went on to be a whole lot bigger than anything my family did. And that recipe was the magic of Sam Adams. You know, I was fortunate because it wasn't my recipe. I had a recipe that was, you know, time tested by competing against, you know, great American beers back when American brewers were small and local and made great beers just like they do today.
So you did not tweak it. It's the same as it was?
It's the same as it was. Why would I mess with it? You know, it was a great beer when it was first made. And then when I started making it, you know, 6 weeks after Sam Adams Boston Lager hit the market, it got picked as the best beer in America. And the whole company was two or three people at that point. And here we had the best beer in America. And we actually went on to win that honor 4 years running. So I knew when they got rid of the award and started just giving out lots more medals so that everybody could have a trophy. And that told me, okay, I've got, you know, magic in these bottles. I've got the best beer in America. Maybe this idea of small, local, handcrafted beer made in small batches is a bigger idea than I thought, because my original business plan was eventually to grow to 8 people. And we would make 5,000 barrels of beer a year, and we would top out. I didn't think the market was going to be bigger than that for something, you know, so out of the mainstream and unique. Well, as we all know, Sam Adams caught on, and it led this whole craft beer revolution. And today, America has 10,000 breweries, and they are making the best beer in the world. And they are also most innovative breweries. So today, you know, 37 years after I launched Sam Adams, America has gone from a beer wasteland to being the best place in the world to be a beer drinker.
Do you, your dad's notes and the recipe and the yellowed paper, is that, do you have that frame somewhere? Is that in a special place, or is it just tucked away in a drawer somewhere?
No, it's not. You know, it was kind of in a drawer for a bunch of years, and then I realized, wait a minute, you know, someday this is going to be in the Smithsonian. So it is actually now in a secure, essentially safe deposit box.
Gotcha.
And it's been scanned and all of that. So, you know, I have a digital copies of it, as high resolution digital copies as well. So, yes, it's gone from being buried under a bunch of 1950s car magazines to actually having a place of honor and security.
What community did you grow up in, and what high school did you go to?
Well, let's see. You know, I was born on the east side, so basically in Mount Lookout. I went to school there, went to Kilgore, where actually another prominent Cincinnatian went. We had the same principal, but the other prominent Cincinnatian is Senator Portman, Rob Portman, who also went to Kilgore. And so Kilgore produced some people who went on to do hopefully good things, provide great beer to Americans and become, you know, one of the most prominent and reasonable and honorable politicians in the country.
Senator Rob Portman, yeah, right, has been a supporter of the craft beer industry.
I was very proud of Cincinnati and of Ohio when, President Biden said, well, I have a deal with Rob Portman. He keeps his word. And it was, to me, the kind of, you know, politics, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, that you want to see happening. You know, you want our political figures to be honest and honorable and to be trustworthy. And, you know, he got a half a trillion dollar infrastructure deal through Congress, the biggest thing that has been done on a bipartisan basis probably in this century. And he went to the same elementary school that I did, though. He told me this story. As I said, we had the same principal, and we were talking about it. And he said, you know, Jim, when I was in third grade, Mr. Heary, that was the principal. When I was in third grade, Mr. Heary told me, Robbie, you know, someday you might be president. And I had to smile because I said, well, you know, Senator, when I was in third grade, Mr. Heary told me this, me the same thing. He said, Jimmy, you know, someday, and it was a little different. He said, someday, Jimmy, you might be in fourth grade, but it might not be next year. So we had different paths, but we were both very fortunate as, I don't know, there's a historian, David McCullough, who's written a lot of really great books, including one about the settling of Ohio at Marietta, and one about the Wright brothers. And in the book on the Wright brothers, he said that the key to a successful and happy life is to be born in Ohio to good parents. So many of us probably on this call and listening have had that good fortune to be born in Ohio of good parents. And I consider that as kind of my first blessing in life.
Do your parents still live here?
No, they passed away, but they lived there their whole life, and there and out where my mother's from. My mother is from Brown County, from a farm outside of Georgetown. And we still have the family farm outside of Georgetown on the east side, on the banks of White Oak Creek.
So, and you grow up here, and the reason why you're in Boston, you went off to school, you went to Harvard, and you decided to stay, and that's where you started your company.
Yes. Yeah, I was very lucky. I got out of high school in the 60s, and people really didn't go to, you know, Ivy League schools so much from Cincinnati. I was kind of in that first wave of, you know, as the Ivy League schools began expanding their reach outside of kind of the sons of the East Coast elite and became, you know, more meritocratic. I was swept up in that wave, was able to go to Harvard, actually ended up with 3 degrees from there. I went to the college, and then I was admitted to this program for, it was a JD MBA, and so you could do 5 years of schooling in 4 years. It was fairly grueling. So I ended up with these 3 Harvard degrees, and then was an Outward Bound instructor for a while, then was a consultant, management consultant, and I'd done that for 7 years, and I realized I didn't really want to do it anymore. And I started thinking about, all right, what do I want to do? And I'd had a lot of clients when I was a consultant that were big companies, and I really didn't like the environments there. I thought they were kind of dysfunctional, and it just wasn't for me. So I thought, well, I think I'm really not cut out to be an employee. I'm going to have to try to start my own company. And I thought about a bunch of different ideas, but it always came back to brewing. And that was how Boston Beer Company started. I started in my kitchen outside of Boston in Newton, Mass, which is also the home of another famous culinary item, the Fig Newton. That came out of Newton, Mass, along with Sam Adams. And the company was 2 people when I started it. We didn't have an office. We basically sold beer and then delivered beer. And nobody had heard of Sam Adams. Nobody had heard of craft beer. I couldn't get a distributor to distribute it. I had to deliver it myself, sometimes out of my station wagon. And the rest kind of is history. It started a craft beer revolution. And America is just a great place to drink beer today. you know, at Cincinnati Oktoberfest, you're going to see it. There'll be imported beers there, you know, but beers like, you know, Sam Adams and Rheingeist and Mad Tree and Braxton and the Sierra Nevada will probably be there. I'm thinking of some of the other craft brewers, some from the Cincinnati area and some from elsewhere. They're just great, great breweries in Cincinnati again.
What do you think of that landscape of how it's just really exploded over the last 10 years?
It's awesome. Sherry, it's like, I could not be happier. You know, if I could have had, you know, another dream when I started Sam Adams, not just Sam Adams succeeding, but, you know, starting a whole craft beer revolution that would change the beer landscape in America forever, that would have been my dream. I mean, it's just great. And I'm very, very happy that all these breweries have started up in Cincinnati. Cincinnati was a little bit late to craft brewing, but not too late.
Where do we fit in now? Like nationally, where does Cincinnati, do you think, rank?
Well, you know, I'm biased. I think Cincinnati has some of the best beers in the country. So, and I think I could defend that beer to beer. People in Cincinnati can be very proud of all of the beers made in the greater Cincinnati area. We're very proud to be kind of the leader. We were the first real craft brewery in Cincinnati. We started brewing there in like 1994 at what used to be the Hudepohl Schaneling Brewery, which we then were able to buy. And we've expanded it. We're in the midst of a huge once in a century upgrade renovation of our Sam Adams Brewery on Central Parkway. We're putting $100 million of investment of upgrading and, you know, state-of-the-art equipment.
What do you make there?
In there, we make everything in our pretty much everything in our portfolio, ranging from, you know, Boston Lager to we have a barrel room there where we're aging beer in used bourbon barrels, and some of that will be served at Cincinnati Oktoberfest. We have a barrel-aged Oktoberfest. It's about 10% ABV, so it's considerably stronger than our regular Oktoberfest, and it's been aged in used bourbon barrels, so it has a really rich, satisfying flavor profile that lays those kind of wood, vanilla, bourbon notes on top of that rich, malty, slightly caramel taste that you get in a classic Oktoberfest.
Have you sold this somewhere else before, or is this going to be the first time?
Nope. It's a special beer. We are not going to sell it everywhere. It's a special beer that we made to celebrate Cincinnati Oktoberfest happening this year, despite this, you know, this COVID mess that we are all struggling through. We thought, hey, we're breaking out. We got to make a celebratory, fun beer for this year's Oktoberfest.
So when folks go to Oktoberfest, what name will it be under?
Sam Adams. I think it's Sam Adams Barrel Aged Oktoberfest.
Okay.
So we'll have it at our tent that's at 2nd and Walnut. And in a couple other places throughout there. And, you know, we also have not just, you know, our world-class brewery in Cincinnati, but we have a tap room.
Yeah.
Right across from the brewery towards Findlay Market.
The outdoor space, the outdoor space there is so lovely. And you kind of get the glow of Findlay Market there. It's really...
Yeah. And to me, I'm just really thrilled to be able to put the Sam Adams Tap Room in, you know, that part of Cincinnati. And, you know, may not be politically correct, but, you know, when we took over the brewery and the brewery 26 years ago, I guess, you know, it's in right at the edge of Over the Rhine and the West End. And that was not a good neighborhood. I mean, it was sort of dangerous. It's shift change at night. You know, we always worried. And it's so exciting to see the revitalization of downtown Cincinnati.
Well, it's catty corner from TQL Stadium now. I mean, it's like.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And when we came there, that was kind of a dangerous area. And now it's alive. You got people, you know, wanting to live there. That is because, I mean, my sister bought a house in Over the Rhine back in like 1985 thinking, well, it's going to be the next Mount Adams. I can't wait. she waited 20 years and gave up on it, but, she should have waited another 10 or 15 because in some ways that's the most exciting area of Cincinnati now.
Oh, you know,
you've got everything changing. It's very cool. We're very proud to be a part of it. We're now starting to get, you know, lots of people coming to the tap room. And as you said, it's a, you know, it's a great outdoor area in the winter. You know, it's a, like a pub atmosphere inside of it. It's right by Findlay Market and it's a great place to go, you know, before, after, even during a soccer game. It's only like three blocks from the new soccer stadium.
I think to show people that you've never forgotten where you came from, and that you honor your family's heritage of brewing in Cincinnati. This is the only tap room, or this is the only tap room outside of the Boston area that you have, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then also, is the brewery here the only brewing facility that you have outside of the Boston area?
We have one in Pennsylvania as well, north of Philadelphia. But Cincinnati it's my home. I am most proud of our brewery there. Like I said, I mean, it's a brewery. It's not quite 100 years old. I think it's 88 years old. So it was pretty, you know, had not been invested in, let's say, when we bought it. So we had to, you know, we really had to basically, you know, rebuild the brewery on its almost century old bones and foundation, and we are just finishing up a $100 million investment in brewing in downtown Cincinnati. So I guess that's a pretty round number for putting your money where your mouth is. $100 million. And Jason, I would have, when I started Sam Adams, if somebody had told me that, you know, eventually I'll be able to invest $100 million in brewing in Cincinnati, I would have said they were out of their freaking mind. But I feel really fortunate to be, you know, now continue to be a part of not just, you know, the past and present of brewing in Cincinnati, but to guarantee that brewery for another 100 years.
And it really is part of our heritage. I am wondering, though, where does the hard stuff? So you've been a leader in a lot of areas of, like, you've not been afraid to be like, well, it's only craft beer, like lead the way in other different areas of taking beer in different directions and different flavors. Where does the hard seltzer fit in?
It's a very good question. And you have to understand, I have a short attention span, maybe. I get excited by new things. I get excited by what you can do by, you know, fermenting grain, with beer yeast and other yeast. And I believe, you know, that, this is a really exciting time to be a brewer in the United States because craft brewers are pushing in new, interesting, innovative directions to give, you know, to use our breweries to make lots of cool stuff. You know, this year it's an odd numbered year. This is a year where we release the most extreme of extreme beers. It's called Sam Adams Utopias, and it literally pushes beer. It's like the star, you know, the Starship Enterprise of beer. It takes beer where no beer has been before. Sam Adams Utopias is finally legal in Ohio. It wasn't for a couple of decades because it weighs in at almost 60 proof. It is the strongest naturally fermented beer in the world, in history, in fact. So that's, and I, to me, that was a, we invented this process of aging beer and used spirits barrels to bring out more and more of the flavor. Now, some of the beer in those Utopias bottles is aged, it goes all the way back to 1992. So it's that beer is well beyond the age of being able to drink itself. It's in its upper 20s now, some of the beer in there. So that's the longest beer has ever, commercial beer has ever been aged. And it sells for $200 a bottle. So that's one direction that we've pushed brewing into, this barrel aged beer, which is now a sort of a foundation of craft brewing. Barrel aging beer, but it hadn't been done until Sam Adams started doing it 30 years ago. And other directions that we've gone, we revived hard cider in the United States, which was actually the number one form of alcoholic beverage in the United States till like the Civil War when beer overtook it. But hard cider was part of, you know, the fabric of America 150 years ago. In fact, in Ohio, if you remember from when you had to take Ohio history and you had Tippecanoe and Tyler too, there was a poster, a campaign poster for William Henry Harrison, and he's got his leg up on a barrel of hard cider, which showed he was a man of the people. We've, you know, also done truly hard seltzer. This was an idea that we came up with, oh gosh, a little over 5 years ago, in February of 2016, thinking, you know, I wonder if we could make something that would be really refreshing, easy to drink, but wouldn't have a lot of calories or carbohydrates, but would have a full 5% alcohol. And so we came up with this, you know, delicious, hard, sparkling water called Truly. And that created the hard seltzer category here in the United States. So
it was the first one?
Yes, it was the first hard seltzer.
And take that, White Claw.
Yeah, White Claw came a little bit later, and then, you know, everybody follows. Bud Light has a hard seltzer, and Corona has one.
The Bud Light one's brutal.
I'm
not asking you to comment on that, or maybe you're going to say no comment.
Well, you know, as a brewer, I think all beer is good. Some beer is better, but all beer is good.
Is the hard seltzer market adding on to the craft brew market, or is it, does it kind of cut into the craft beer market?
You know, Sherry, that's a good question, and the answer is some of both. You know, it somewhat takes away from craft beer, but it also brings in new drinkers. It probably takes away most from hard liquor and from wine, you know, from vodka soda and, you know, Chardonnay and Chablis, those lighter white wines, and from, you know, some of the lighter, you know, hard liquor drinks. Our philosophy has always been, you know, if it's something cool and we want to make it, let's just do it. We won't worry about what is it cannibalized, because you never really know. And if you worry about that stuff all the time, you never do cool stuff. And as brewers, that's what we want to do, is like the next cool thing. I want that to come from Sam Adams and Boston Beer Company.
Is hard seltzer here to stay, or was it a fad?
Oh, no, it's here to stay. It's over 10% of the U.S. beer business today. It's almost the size of craft beer, believe it or not. So, and I think it's here to stay because it meets a real consumer need. You know, people are very calorie conscious. People are very carb conscious. So like a hard seltzer has, you know, maybe 0 or 1 gram of carbs, and, you know, way less alcohol than, you know, some of the, you know, like a tequila soda or a margarita. I mean, I was looking at a canned margarita and it had 360 calories in that can.
And it's probably, you know, not good.
Well, it's what it is. But there is a lot of demand for things that, you know, have the regular 5% alcohol that you get in a craft beer, but aren't maybe not as filling, not as many carbs, not as many calories. There is a demand for that, and that's why hard seltzer is here to stay. I mean, it's, you know, summertime. It's after you. I had two of them after I did a long bike ride this past weekend, and you know, when I got off my bike after 60 miles, I wanted a truly hard seltzer. So, yes, it is here to stay.
Jim, what? So you start Boston Beer Company in the mid 1984, and what? You're light years ahead in the craft business industry. I mean, what took the rest of the industry, you know, 25 years to catch up? Why do you think no one else really, you know, took the step that you took decades ago?
Well, you know, we were small. It was really a very special thing. Because Sam Adams didn't look, smell, or taste like any other beer that people had had when it came out in the 80s. People had had European imports like Heineken and Beck's. They'd had Molson. They'd had Corona. They'd had Stella. But those beers kind of taste like Bud Miller and Coors, only maybe a little more hops, but they weren't dramatically different. Sam Adams was dramatically different. It was a shock to the taste buds of people who had never had anything but, you know, a Bud Miller and Coors and maybe a Heineken or a Corona on a big night out. And so it took a little while for people to get used to that taste. I mean, there were a few people, some home brewers and people who'd like lived in, you know, abroad in Germany, were served over there that were used to beer that was rich and flavorful and had the taste of malt and hops in it. So it took it a while. It was the first 5 or 10 years were, you know, was a long, slow ramp up. And we were a small company. You know, like I said, the company was two people when we launched, so we didn't have the advertising resources of the big companies. We couldn't do TV ads, be on the Super Bowl, any of that kind of stuff, which was fine. I was quite happy. You know, we were growing and I was getting to do what I loved. So it didn't bother me that, you know, it took us a long time to get to 1% of the U.S. beer business. A long, long time. That's okay. You know, I started out with nothing, so I was happy every single day.
Well, we see more Sam Adams tap rooms around as obviously tap. I mean, it's such a neighborhood thing. Will we see more Sam Adams tap rooms around the country?
Honestly, Jason, probably not. Just because it's not what I love to do.
Yeah.
I love to make beer.
Yeah.
And when you're running a tap room, you got one foot in brewing, but you got your other foot in running a bar or a restaurant.
Yeah.
And you got a kitchen and you got servers. And I'm not good at that. And Boston Beer Company, and we're not really good at that. We are good at making unique, wonderful, rich, flavorful, delicious, innovative, beverages out of, you know, grain and yeast. Running a bar, no. You know, there's great people that know how to run bars. Cincinnati's actually got some, you know, really great operators in the bar and restaurant business.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
We are not one of them. You know, we're not good at it. And I know enough about bars to know it's really hard work. And I know enough about myself to say one of the things I hate is really hard work. I like to do what is fun to me.
What's next? Like, what's the next hard seltzer? Is there something coming?
Well, we're always, you know, looking for what cool things can we do. So I don't know if there's going to be a next hard seltzer. I mean, that was a rocket ship, and it still is. So that was the biggest thing to hit you know, the alcoholic beverage industry in the United States since light beer 50 years ago. That was a once-in-a-lifetime phenomenon, I think. But we're okay with things that don't get huge. I mean, we like to make things, even if they stay small. So I'll give you something, because we just announced it this week. Somebody gave me a special drink called the Long Drink. It's the national drink of Finland. It's a very interesting beverage. You could think of it as a sparkling citrus refresher. It's got some citrus notes, some grapefruit, some soft orange, a little bit of lime, and then some botanicals in the background. And it's like 5.8% ABV. It comes in a can. It's super refreshing, but really flavorful. And it's, you can't really find it in the United States, but I liked it. And so we're going to take, you know, we're going to take a shot at that. So you're going to see something called Bevy, B-E-V-Y. The Bevy is what a group of swans is. A swan is the national bird of Finland. So it's a kind of tip of the hat to the Finnish origins of this drink. But, you know, Finland is the happiest country in the world. In these surveys of happiness, Finland comes out on top. It's the happiest country in the world. And in the winter, they got like 22 hours of darkness. So they must be doing something right. We figured it's got to at least have some kind of relationship to the alcohol that they consume.
Absolutely.
yeah. So we'll see if we'd love to bring a little of that Finnish happiness to the United States.
What is I have to give you one drink. I can't say just beer. Because you have so many different brands. You have Angry Orchard, Twisted Tea, you have Dogfish Head beer, and you know, Sam Adams, a couple other lines as well. What is the one drink that you absolutely love, that is your absolute favorite?
That's easy, Jason. I mean, because if you came to my house and opened my refrigerator, or actually went out on the patio and looked at the kegerator, you would see Sam Adams Boston Lager.
I figured you'd say that.
Because that's, you know, I've been drinking that beer pretty much every day of my life for 37 years, and I still haven't gotten tired of it. I've almost finished my glass of it. I poured it when we started, and I'm almost at the bottom of my glass. So, I've had a Sam Adams Boston Lager while, we had our talk today. That's, it's to me, and I've had thousands of beers, literally thousands of beers. Sam Adams Boston Lager is, and always has been, a reliably rewarding beer experience. I have never been disappointed. And even after, I think I've calculated at one point, I think I've had like, you know, 20,000 of them in my life. And And not only have I not gotten tired of it, every time when I have one, if I really, you know, put on my brewmaster beer taster's hat, I can find new flavor combinations buried in it. So to me, it's not only reliably rewarding, but also just kind of endlessly interesting and endlessly unfolding its secrets and its flavors, you know, bottle by bottle over 37 years.
I got to tell you, Jim, there are few, and this is me as a beer drinker, there are few better treats than a Sam Adams Oktoberfest on draft.
Yes, the words come to my mind, like rich, creamy, smooth, delicious. That's what I think of. You're right. Yeah. That malt smoothness that gets all the way to creamy is a unique beer experience. And you are, when you talk about Sam Adams Oktoberfest, you are talking about the largest selling Oktoberfest beer in the world.
It outsells not surprised about at all.
All of the German Oktoberfests, because frankly, it's a better tasting beer.
I mean, what time does the tap room open? We might have to head from here to there.
We'll open it in the morning.
How long's the? I know we're sort of just jump around, but do you know how long the? Like you said, the special, and I think this is great, just for Cincinnatians, just for Cincinnati Oktoberfest next week is the special barrel age Sam Adams Oktoberfest. How long has that been aging?
A couple of months.
Okay.
Yep. In the barrel room there at the brewery in Cincinnati. You can actually see the barrel room across from the Sam Adams tap room. And we put stained glass windows in it to pay tribute, actually, to Cincinnati's brewing heritage. There's a, in one of the windows is Christian Moorlein, who was a well-known Cincinnati brewery, well-known Cincinnati brewer, and Greg Hardiman, who is Cincinnatian, who revived Christian Moorlein. So I want to, you know, tip my hat to Greg and to Christian Moorlein, who was a great 19th century Cincinnati brewer.
Great stuff, Jim. And I just super appreciate, you know, not only your contributions to the craft beer industry, but just the fact that you've never forgotten where you came from. And you've invested so much here, as you said, $100 million just coming up alone in your current brewery, but that you never forgot Cincinnati and that you've made it a big part of your company. And I have a lot of respect for that. And just really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And I, you know, to me, it's just, it's paying back. You know, I am who I am because I was lucky enough to be born in Cincinnati and have good parents. So it is just a part of who I am. And I, whenever I come back to Cincinnati, I feel like I'm coming home. You know, I get to the airport, I see the gold star, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting a veggie five-way, and I'm going to feel like I've come home.
Great stuff.
Well, hopefully we will get to see you at Oktoberfest Cincinnati. We are definitely going to be hunting down this aged beer. Yeah, there's no question.
I won't be hard to find. I think I'm going to, if all things work out, I'll tap the ceremonial first keg. So that will be, that's always fun to hear the hopefully there's going to be good German music and we'll have all of the German American clubs parading in their dirndls and their lederhosen. And I will toast them with a Sam Adams Boston Lager.
Thanks again to Jim Cook, and goodness, love his storytelling. And just, it just truly amazes me how he had the foresight 25, some nearly 30 years ahead of his time. on the craft beer, because you can't, as we've had Bobby Slattery on from 50 West, you know, he's talking about the fact that there probably should be a brewery in every neighborhood now. And to think that we've gone from Samuel Adams starting in the mid 1980s as the craft beer, and I don't know, pioneer, to not, to hear, you know, 30 some, my math's terrible, but what are we, 30 some years later? And, you know, really within the last decade has just become kind of a thing. So, you know, you went 20, 25 years without really anyone trying to.
It speaks to the recipe he was talking about. And then he's describing it, right? Like that description, that's going to stay with me for a while, yeah, just to hear it like that. But, you know, quality. Quality matters. And he started with quality.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you know what, Sherry, we had our, we both were, thought of our Cincinnati moment of the week, but then we thought, let's scrap that and let's just make Jim Cook our Cincinnati moment of the week, especially as Oktoberfest comes along. So we're going to cheers to him and his company and, you know, big sponsor of, our Oktoberfest, the world's largest in 2021. So that's fantastic. And we also want to share, this very week is our third year anniversary of That's Just Cincinnati starting. We started the week of Labor Day in 2018 with Paul Daner Jr. got this thing going. And then Sherry came in not too long after that.
It's gone from you and Paul coming over to my desk to be like, what should we talk about at the beginning, the morning of the podcast, to having to plan it with you. I'm not sure which I prefer.
It's funny because I remember we had you on as a regular guest so many times. And then it's like, let's just get Sherry in
here.
This
is one of my favorite parts of the week. Yeah. I love this. And I love you guys for listening. I appreciate it.
Speaking of, I'm in. And this shout out to Chris. I won't say his last name. Listener Chris. I meet him at our community pool the other day. I'm hanging out at the community pool. And it turns out his daughter, my youngest son, go to the same preschool. And he says, hey, I'm Chris. Day one listener of the podcast. So from day one, shout out to Chris for listener. And I know so many others have been day one.
I still remember going to 50 West and sitting there and hearing somebody talk about the podcast with you and Paul and how much they loved you, and me turning around and being like, I know that guy. So we've had a lot of fun moments. And
yeah.
And so, we've gone from sitting at 50 West. We had on Bobby Slattery on the podcast, like the guests. It's just go back and listen, guys. We've had some great people over these 3 years.
Yeah. It was pretty – in a great get, Sherry lands Jim Cook today. So,
well, he was very kind to join us.
Yeah, he was.
It was one of the ones where I wish we did it in person.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we could have gone for another 2 hours. Just that's the beer geek in me. But – you've got things to do. We've got things to do. So
you mean cover an election? Okay.
Cover an election. Is that what we got? Anyway. Well, thanks. Thanks again for listening. And we got our guests lined up for next week. So we'll catch you next week.